that music can mean only one thing, the gurus of how-to, or in this case, our original guru of how-to, Alvin Ubell.
It's a singular now. I'm doing a single. No double. My double went someplace else, you know.
He's on vacation?
Well, he was invited by an old friend of his who has a place in Paris, and that's where he is at right now. I spoke to him day before yesterday, and he's okay. He's having fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's what else are you going to do in Paris?
Well, if you don't eat well and look at great art and look at beautiful architecture.
Yeah, well, if you don't live there, the only thing you can do is have fun. I mean, and that goes with every place in the world. You know, if you don't live there, have fun there. That's it.
You miss your son, I assume.
Not really.
I mean, he works with you in your
yes,
business.
He's a vital peg in our office, and we're getting bogged down with work, and that's very good. Also, we're getting a lot of calls and a lot of mail, and I beg of you out there, Lee, give us your telephone number, especially people who go on to our email and send us email, and then when I write a long description of what they got to fix and how to fix it, right away, it comes back. It's not receiving that email because they want my passport. They want all the things about me. Who am I? And I said, forget it.
Date of birth.
What?
Date of birth.
And they want
they have all your shots.
And my mother's maiden name. And
Social Security.
It's crazy.
Well, Larry always asks people to add a phone number because that way you can ask questions and do follow-up. Sometimes that can save you an awful lot of time.
Yes. By composing something takes me longer because I'm not the great speller of the world. But thank goodness for the computer. It helps me out a little bit. But I can answer many more questions over the phone than I can with writing back to them.
We all appreciate spell check.
Yes,
I've had spell check and tuchus for years.
Except when you put in a homonym.
A homonym, yeah. Whoa, Alvin. That's the secret word for today.
Then the computer don't know what you want.
Well, we call you the guru of how-to, but you're also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York.
Yes, by the way, Accurate Building Inspectors coming into its 50th year.
Wow. And you've been on this show for 26, 27
something
years.
Something like that. But it's coming into its 50th year. I don't know why we're still surviving after 50 years. It's maybe we did more right than we did wrong. That's the whole thing. You know, the right side is better than the wrong side.
Well, people will still continue to buy houses or rent places and need advice.
Hopefully that continues and grows. The painful part about the recent downturn in the economy is not that our business is not doing well. We happen to be fortunate enough to be in New York where the real estate business is still holding its own. It's not as good as it used to be, but it's holding its own. But it breaks my heart to see what's going on in the Midwest and people are actually losing their homes. That is such a horror. I meet people who lose their home and the pain is so terrible. It's almost like losing a loved one. Exactly.
We remind you that you can call us. Our number here is 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. That's a new number that we're giving out. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. This is a time when the weather is changing and people are not likely to be using their air conditioners again.
It's a transition between air conditioning and heating, and you have there's some days people have to shut off the system altogether because the weather happens to be just right in the morning. It may not be the same in the afternoon or in the evening or whenever. It is the fluctuation of going from being cold under the covers and being comfortable under the covers to being perspiring under the covers is dramatic in this part of the year.
But it's interesting, in our area, we don't have that wide variation. In many parts of the country, it'll be very hot during the day and very cold at night. We tend to have similar temperatures overnight.
It's true to a certain extent. Right now, people are complaining. At certain evenings, all of a sudden, it dropped down to almost 40 degrees for for one day, and people wanted these big buildings to heat themselves up. And that's very difficult to heat up a whole building in one day. It usually takes a couple of days, a very large building, maybe with 100 tenants or something like that. You can't heat that building up that quickly. You have to realize that in order to heat up a building or even to air condition a building, the whole building has to acclimate to the temperature. And so what happens if the building is already hot from the summer and now you got to cool it down, all the heat goes. It's a heat transfer and absorption situation.
But what about in a smaller building? You still got to get the boiler going and all of that.
Well, that's a little easier. A one or two family house or a four family house, you turn it on and within an hour you're comfortable.
And what about the air conditioner? Should we take it out of the sleeve?
Well, that's if you're not if you're able to. Sometimes it's very difficult. It may be jammed in there and maybe need somebody to help you. But the window air conditioners can be pulled out of the window and they can out of the sleeve or off the window, and they can be washed with a hose to get all that schmutz out of the inside, change the filters or clean the filters, and then put them back in again. And then you can cover the inside of the air conditioning unit, but don't cover the outside. Let the moisture or whatever gets into that air conditioning unit to evaporate naturally, because if you don't, you'll have a fungus build up in that, or something will start growing. You'll have dirt in there. And I've seen air conditioning units that out the window, and all of a sudden you see plants in the summertime growing right out of the grill work. And I say,
you got to let it breathe.
You got to let it breathe. And that's what's going on.
Our number again is 646-829-3985. A reminder that whenever the gurus come here, there's always a word quiz as well. And Alvin?
Yeah, I can put this. This is not.
Why don't you read this one?
This is real difficult. I hope it's difficult. What's the name given to a type of roof tile? You know, a lot of the houses around the city of New York use tiles instead of asphalt shingles. And these tiles have a shape to it. You find them in Forest Hills Gardens. You find them in Staten Island. Even in my area, in the southern end of Brooklyn, you find them on the roofs. They're very expensive. But these types of roof tiles have a special name to it, and it has the shape of an S.
Well, you're more likely to see this in warmer climates.
Yes, but you see it in Florida. Florida has this kind of shingle.
In California.
California.
I saw a lot of them in Italy recently.
Well, it's a very good tile because it's heavy, and when you have a windstorm, it doesn't tend to blow off or tear off. Occasionally, they do break or something like that because they're made out of terracotta and like a coffee cup, the same material.
And what is the advantage of having an S-shaped tile as opposed to just a flat tile?
Well, what it does is it enables the water to run off the upper curve. You know, the convex portion of it is up, and the water drains down into a slight little concave piece that acts like a drain and draws it over to the next shingle downward, so that the water really drains almost in a controlled mechanism rather than the asphalt shingle where it goes all over the place. So you can really detour the water where you want it to go and almost instantly detect where a leak could be coming from. It's a great tile, but it's expensive, but it has a special name, and we would like somebody to figure out what that name is.
Because you get a prize. Our number is 646-829-3985. My guest is Alvin Ubell, the original guru of How To. He later invited his son, Lawrence, to join him as the gurus of How To.
Yes, it was
it was quite traumatic. More kids in the business. We could have had a whole troop of gurus. This is WMYC, WMYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And talking about tiles, a different kind of tiles. A listener, Lisa from Nyack, has written in, I have a loose tile on the floor of my shower. How do I reattach this properly? I assume that if I only grout around the tile, it won't hold.
That's true. What you can do, if the particular tile is loose and it can come away, first of all, leave it overnight without using the shower. And then the point where you want to repair it, you'll need a hair dryer. And what you should do is take the hair dryer and blow it onto that area where the tile is missing. What you will need is some silicone cork. Depending upon the grout, I would refer buying the clear cork, but you can also buy the white cork. And put that underneath on the tile bottom and just squeeze that into place until it squeezes up. And then take the hair dryer again and go over and make it a little warmer so it's nice and warm. And leave it alone till the next day.
So you can't take a shower for a full day.
You can't take the shower for 24 hours. Then the next day, any residue that comes up on the surface from the tile, you could take a razor blade and just clean it off very nice, and that tile will be down forever.
Okay. Let's take a call. Kim from Ridgewood, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. So I left town. I was out of town for a couple weeks, and when I got home, I have a light switch that works for my basement lights, and it works for my exterior light, and all of a sudden it just wouldn't work. So I figured, well, that's odd, but maybe all of the light bulbs in the basement burned out, so I changed them, and it's not the case. It just won't work, and it's just odd that, you know, it worked fine before, and now it doesn't work.
Well, it sounds like...
The answer is don't go on vacation.
It sounds like it's one of two things. Either that particular light circuit is on a separate fuse or circuit breaker, and the circuit breaker tripped out, or the fuse is burnt out.
Okay, yeah. Now, I meant to tell you, we do have circuit breakers, and that's the first thing I thought before anything, because it's strange that, you know, all of these light bulbs would burn out. So I went down, and I checked all of the circuits.
Well, by looking at the circuit breaker, sometimes it really doesn't tell you whether the circuit breaker tripped out or not.
Uh-huh.
That's some circuit breakers will trip out and a little red button will show up. But a lot of the old type will not. Sometimes they don't even trip, but they tripped internally. What you have to do really is go down to the basement and turn off the switch and then turn it back on again. And by right, every switch on the circuit breaker panel box, depending upon how it's connected, and some electrician has to show you which ones you should touch and which ones you shouldn't, but they should really operate them at least once a year. This will suffer. This prevents them from suffering from atrophy. But if that particular light doesn't work for two locations, the light switch itself could be defective.
Or there could be a loose wire or something.
It could be a loose wire or defective. And if it controls two different areas, it could be a double-pole, double-throw toggle switch. And that's it depends upon how that electrician wired up. There are like 10 or 15 different ways of wiring up something.
So she should try the fuse. And
yes.
Then if that doesn't work, then she has to call an electrician. You,
yes. I cannot actually, if you go to my website, there's a place that tells you how to replace a light switch. And if you follow the instructions meticulously, you'll be okay.
Otherwise, you're going to kill yourself.
No, you won't kill yourself. You may get frightened or you may burn out something that you don't want to burn out. But you should use caution.
Mark from Teaneck. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have an older home that has several windows that have the panes of glass that are leaded, meaning the lead between the diagonal panes.
Yes, that's like one of they make the beautiful windows that they have in churches and synagogues and all kinds of stained glass kinds of panels. Go ahead.
Right, it's the same idea, only they aren't stained.
Yes,
and there are cracks in the lead, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to fix them. You know, can I just get out my soldering iron and try to go in there, or should I pull the whole thing out,
lay it
down flat?
It depends upon the kind of solder it is. If you haven't done that stained glass technique and knowing how to and how much heat to put onto it, you may do more damage than you anticipate. If it doesn't leak water or it doesn't leak air, I would leave it alone. Even though it looks bad, it's best not to touch it. However, if it is leaking or something like that, I would buy some acrylic cork and just just put it into the corners. Then take my finger and rub it over, and then wipe it away with a sponge so it's nice and smooth. And that will that will suffice just as good as the lead that is there already.
Okay, thanks so much for your call. TK from North Bergen, New Jersey writes, I have a fairly old stove and need to use a lighter in order to turn the burners on. Is there a way to fix the stove burner so that they turn on when the knob is just set to light mode?
Well, I don't know whether his is equipped with a pilot light or an electronic ignition type. That is,
well, if it's an old one, it's
but if
a
it's
pilot
very
light.
Old and it doesn't have a pilot light connection, there is no. There are ways to retrofit that kind of thing, but it is not cost effective. It is just a lot. It's a lot of work.
But let's say it's the pilot. Could it just be clogged up?
Yes, you can. If it's just a pilot, sometimes the little orifice at the pilot light connection just needs a pin needle, and just take out what may be clogging that little portion up. What happens is food sometimes falls on where the pilot light is, and then the food solidifies or gets hard and brittle because it's very hot there. The other thing is there is a control dial in that unit, if it does have a pilot light, which requires a flat-bladed screwdriver to open up the orifice or close it. But to make sure that each of the openings or the orifice that is has the gas coming out is clear, and just need all you need is a safety pin to go into that hole.
Thank you for your call. Oh, or I guess that person wrote.
Yes.
Linez from Mount Vernon. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a very small house, and I have a furnace that's very old. It's been in the house since in the 50s, and I have to replace it now.
Why?
Because they said it's not cost-effective anymore.
All right, I'll tell you something. I have an argument with all the fuel companies and everything about cost-effectiveness. Of course, the effectiveness of a furnace for a residential home. I always feel if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And the cost of putting in a brand new unit, whatever it is, I believe, would have to really look at your unit to really tell you candidly what's going on. But if the unit is working and you replace it, the cost that you will have to put into the initial installation will take you 10, 15, 20 years to get your money back. It just doesn't work out mathematically. Nobody has ever shown me that in a one or two or three or four family house to replace the boiler because it's going to go from, say, 75% efficiency to 80% efficiency or 90% efficiency, that you will get your money back on that unit. You also have to realize that the furnace is only working full-time about maybe 3 to 4 months out of a 12-month period. So that's only about a quarter of the year. So it would take you forever to get your money back. It just doesn't work out mathematically. When they show me that it does, then maybe I'll change my mind.
We have to take a little break, and we'll be back. More of your calls to Alvin Ubell, the Guru of How To. The number is 646-829-3985. And don't forget the quiz, which is, what is the name given to a type of roof tile that has the shape of an S? Back right after this. And we are back with the Guru of How To, Al and Larry Ubell. A listener left a comment. It says, we had a home inspector miss something big when we bought our first home a few months ago. It was something that, in retrospect, should have been obvious. We had to repair the problem, but the inspector refuses to even refund our inspection fee despite evidence that he was negligent. How should we proceed?
Well, the thing is that all of us who do home inspections or building inspections are fully insured. If you're licensed in the state of New York, you must have insurance to cover that. If the individual or firm is not willing to negotiate something, the first step would be to contact say, the Better Business, not the Better Business Bureau, but the New York Consumer Protection Agencies, also the licensing division of the state of New York, if this is in New York State. New Jersey also has a licensure program for the same thing, where also Connecticut, Massachusetts, of which our firm is licensed in all these states. However, you just have to sit down and negotiate, and the worst comes to worst. You take them to small claims court, and you'll get something back.
Because, usually split the difference in small claims court.
Yeah, usually they split it down the middle. The point is that whatever he or she had missed in the investigation is got to be proven dramatically that whatever he missed was actually detectable at the time of the inspection, where he did not have to be invasive to your building. If he had to take something apart in order to discover what is defective, then you may not have a case. But if something was obvious, in other words, it was obvious that he should have been able to detect what is defective, then you probably have a case. I'm not a lawyer, and that's really a legal kind of
thing. Yeah, but it's something you think about, because I'm sure there are times when you might very well miss something in a home inspection, although I'm sure you've never done it.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, in any industry, whether it be a doctor, a lawyer, or a building inspector, one who makes no mistakes does no work.
Yeah. Well, I know that from being a talk show host. We have some people who have answers to the quiz. Should we deal with that?
Let's go.
Okay. What do you think it is, Ron? Ron from Chester, New Jersey.
Hi there. I believe it's Mission Tile.
No. Mission Tile is a little bit more, it's different. It is pointed. It's the same shape pretty much, but it looks like almost like a gable end on the roof.
Anyway, that's not the answer we're looking for. No. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Very much welcome.
And now we have Linda from New Jersey. Hi, Linda. What do you think it is?
Well, now that I just heard what that other guy said, I wasn't going to say mission, but I was going to say something even more general. I know it's a type of, I thought, terracotta tile.
Well,
I'm sure he's looking for something more specific.
Well, the terracotta is the material in which it is made of.
Right.
It's a clay tile. It's the same kind of material that a flower pot is made out of, or a coffee cup is made out of. That's terracotta.
Well.
All right.
Thank you.
You're
very much welcome.
And Barry from Scarsdale?
I believe it's called a pan tile, and it does not have
What were you saying, Barry? I'm sorry. We were announcing that you won.
I don't think it has to be made of terracotta. I think any tile made in that shape is called a pan tile.
Well, that's true, too, because right now they're making the pan tiles out of metal, and they're vulcanizing them with all kinds of material in order to constitute that same traditional shape, and the shape happens to be very strategic in the control of roof water, and you can find that pan tile material, but traditionally it is made out of terracotta, and that's what you find in most areas. There are some new kinds of materials around also. Hang on there so they can take your name and your address, and you will receive Save Energy, Save Money by myself, who is the author, and George Merlis, who is my producer on Good Morning America. We collaborated on this, and it sold over 1 million copies. So you're going to get a nice something that could save you money and save energy.
Okay, and one of my producers will talk to me in just a moment as soon as I put you on hold. And I just did. Have a lot of people writing in, Alvin, and Kathy in Brooklyn writes, we live in the bottom two floors of a brownstone. There's a shower room on the bottom floor where the drain has a nasty smell. Now I notice the sink in the kitchen upstairs also has this odor. Does the drain need to be irrigated, or can bleach or enzyme solution eliminate the odor?
Well, if you have odor coming out of that drain, worse than having the drain filled with whatever garbage is in there, it could be that the system in the floor drain or the sink drain is not vented, because if it is vented properly, that odor should be reversed, be sucking into the drain system and going up through the vent stack into the roof. Once you, the only way to check whether the venting is working is to fill that sink up with water. And if the water drains out and makes a gurgling sound like glub, 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 that means the venting system is not functioning. The same goes with the shower. If you take like a stop pad and put it over the shower bottom and fill the shower bottom up with water and then take the pad away and it drains out, and at the end of the draining period, it makes a gurgling sound, that means the vent is either blocked or the vent is not functioning or the vent is non-existent. So this is a job for a plumber to come in and repair that. Now, you brought up a subject matter. What's coming out of that drain is sewer gas, which is really methane gas. It's from the fermentation of the dirt that goes into that sewer system.
That sounds terrible.
And that could be, not only is it noxious, but it could be toxic and also has known to be explosive. So
wow.
Take care of it. It is a very important thing to take care of.
Thank you for writing us. And now, Joe from Flushing, you're on the air.
Hi. We just bought a home in Flushing, built around 1936. And there was plaster walls and plaster ceilings. And they've all been coated with calcimine paint originally. And I want to know what the best approach would be to recoat that calcimine, because it seems to throw off the new paint.
Well, any kind of coating that you put on a wall is going to be only as strong as what's on the wall or the ceiling itself. And calcimine, which is really all that is lime put into some water, and they put it on with a brush. It's very sterile in the first, and that happened in the during the Depression when paint was very expensive. But getting a bag of lime and mixing some warm water with it was very inexpensive, and you have a clean room. A lot of landlords used to do that very quickly in order to rent apartments during the Depression period. The only solution is to really have the wall scraped off, but that could be very costly. What I find is that people who have that problem just put on like half inch or 1/8 of an inch or 1/4 inch sheetrock over the whole walls and the ceiling, screw it into place, or glue it up to the walls and screw it, and then what you do is you paint over, tape, and spackle.
I've been using some fiberglass screening, actually, and embedding it into the plaster itself. I don't know if that's going to work or not.
But you're taking it in and putting on what they call taping compound in order to glue to the whitewash. That is only as strong as the whitewash. It's just going to come right off. If you have to screw it onto the walls like regular sheetrock wall, and that really works. The technique that you employed is a technique called canvassing the walls and the ceilings. That's only good when you have allegation of the ceiling or the walls or the plaster is cracking, but the actual paint is adhering properly.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
What about putting on something like Rust-Oleum, the company you used to work for?
Oh, Rust-Oleum. That's where I learned all of this stuff, from Rust-Oleum. They letting me go out in the world and talk about Rust-Oleum, they made sure I knew more about paint than anybody. But the thing is, the paint, no matter whether it be Rust-Oleum or Benjamin Moore, is only as good as the surface in which you apply it to. If the base or foundation of that paint is not adhering properly, doesn't have a good mechanical connection, it's going to just peel off again.
We go now to Michael from Weston, Connecticut. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. So I have a furnace. It's old. It's about 30 or so years old. And I was told that the inside of it, where the guts are, the concrete cylinder, which holds the flame, has a very large crack. And therefore, I need to replace the entire unit because that concrete cylinder cannot be repaired.
Well, I would have to see the unit. That's called the combustion chamber. That combustion chamber is made out of sometimes precast fire brick, or fire stone, and it's usually a piece that fits into that. A good contractor who is honest and really wants to serve you well can find a way of making a combustion chamber if that's just the masonry that is broken. If this is a cast iron boiler and there's is it a steel boiler?
I don't know. I think it's steel, yes.
If it's a steel boiler and it's a steel that is corroding through, that could be patched up and welded and made it repaired. Depends upon the size. How large a building is this, by the way?
This is a 2,000 square foot house.
Oh, it's a 2,000. It's a single family home.
That's right.
Oh, so if it's just a combustion chamber, they make retrofitting, rebuild or reestablish combustion chambers, and sometimes a good mechanic could actually mold out a new combustion chamber with fire brick and fire cement and put it all together.
Thank you so much for your call. Sonia from New Jersey. A lot of calls from New Jersey today. Are people having problems because of the new governor, or is it just a coincidence?
I think we have not too many problems because of the governor related to our homes, except for the taxes maybe. But I have a particular problem that I just want to find out what I should do in preparation for the winter to make sure that my boiler is functioning safely and efficiently.
Well,
I think this is something a lot of people would be concerned about.
That absolutely, but is that furnace being fired with oil or gas?
With gas.
With gas. Usually, the utility company can provide you a list of people that come in and adjust the unit to make sure that it's firing properly. Make sure that the draft for up the flue and the chimney is also working properly. Make sure that there is no carbonization taking place. Some utility companies do this as part of their service arrangements with you, but there are some utility companies that have a list of subcontractors that come in and charge a small fee to come in and check out to make sure that the controls, the safeties, the gauges, the high limit switches, the low limit switches are all working properly and are properly calibrated. And that's what I would recommend.
Okay. Do you have time for another question?
Well, actually, we should try to get another person in here. But thank you so much.
Thank you.
Since a lot of people are not going to get on the air, we should remind them that they can write to you or to Larry. Should they write to Larry?
They can write to us through the email is really the best way. It's either Alvin, it's either Alvin at AccurateBuilding.com or Larry at AccurateBuilding.com. Also, we have a new thing on our website that has the mail that you could see a place where you're putting your name, address, and everything else. But please, I beg of you, give us a telephone number. We will call you back, and we will try to help you out of your predicament.
We have very little time, but I want to slip one more question in. Lewis from Brooklyn, there's a minimal amount of mold in the basement of a home we're interested in purchasing. Can we use a mold test kit to determine if it's toxic, or do we need to suck it up and send in an environmental engineer?
Well, actually, the getting rid of mold, if it's just a minor condition, can be removed with some chlorine bleach and liquid detergent and a good scrub job and everything else. But mold is not really the problem. It's a symptom to a problem. There is moisture in that basement, or the relative humidity in that basement is higher than 50%. And therefore, maybe it's in need of a dehumidifier or maybe some ventilation, or maybe it needs to be heated. If you heat a place, that basement up, maybe you will get rid of that mold. But there could be some leakage someplace, and that's what you got to control.
But you do have to have ventilation because mold thrives on being in an enclosed space.
That's exactly right, because mold needs a couple of things. It needs a nutrient in order to survive. It's a living and breathing organism. It needs moisture, and it needs the right temperature.
Alvin Ubell of Accurate Building Inspectors, our guru of how-to, will be back with his son, Lawrence, on Wednesday, November 10th.
Where we will show all of New York, New Hampshire, Connecticut, and all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and do it safely.